Praise the Lord that Christ receiveth sinful men. I was blessed with that song. Good evening. Greetings in Jesus' name again. It's glad to be here with you today. I've often heard of the Church at Calvary, but I never was here before, at least not at church. I want to share just a little story. About 8 years ago, I came out and met Edwin at his house to travel to Bangladesh with him. Drove a little Chevy Cruze that was well aged already and came out here and parked there and went. There was two young men from this congregation that took us to the airport at Dulles. And when I came back, my car had brand new tires on it. And that just, like, wow. Somehow they noticed that they were really worn, and I guess they thought this poor missionary needed something. And I was blessed by that. I don't think either one of those boys are here tonight, but they were young men who, I guess, volunteered, or Edwin asked them to take us to the airport, and I came back, and I was blessed with that. And so I had to think about that when I was given this topic, so apparently somebody taught them something right. And so I guess that was my first reaction when I thought about sharing this topic tonight. Teaching our children a good work ethic is, who am I to come out and teach people out east who know how to work on this subject? I asked Jason what he had in mind when you all picked the topic, and he didn't give me a lot of direction. He said I should take the liberty to share what God laid in my heart. And so I'm going to endeavor to do that. And I studied into this subject, and it kind of grew on me, you might say. And when that happens, the notes grow on you too. And before you know it, you have maybe more material than you need to work with. But what's interesting is, if you think about this topic, you could go many different directions. So I could start off with just presuming that all of you adults here have a good concept of what a work ethic is, and you're somehow wanting me to help you tell you how to teach your children this. Or I could go from the perspective that maybe some of you have a flawed view of work ethic. But with that, who am I to say that I have the right answers to this question? But I believe that every generation, I did some studying, I read some different articles, and it's interesting that about every generation has this idea that the next generation doesn't know quite how to work like we did. I thought that was interesting. If you go back, even a couple hundred years ago, they had the same fear or concept that maybe our children don't know how to work like we did back in the good old days. Or what were the good old days? Well, which era do you want to attached to that? But I do believe that our growing up, what environment we grew up with, what family we grew up in, will have a huge impact on how we look at work and the ethic. So I plan to share some of my growing up years throughout this message, what I experienced growing up. I plan to share some views of what our American culture seems to have about and how it's affecting us. But of course, I also want to, most importantly, look at what the Bible teaches us about this subject. For a key verse that I believe is foundational, and I'll use this verse, Matthew 6:21, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." I don't plan to elaborate a lot on this verse, but I think as we move through the message, you will understand the burden or the reason I chose this verse. Because I believe that it is very clear and it's very easily to be understood that where your treasure is, what's really important to you, what's dear to you, is it will start to ooze and seep out of you in many different ways in how you work, how you look at money, so where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Proverbs 23:7 says, "For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he." So again, as we think is how we are going to act. Let's just be honest with ourselves. That's what it is. So I believe that our concept as adults of our work ethic will without a doubt bleed out in how we teach it. Well, at the outset, let's define the term work ethic. What do we mean by ethic? Well, an ethic is a set of moral principles, a theory or system of moral values. You know, the word ethic would cover a much broader spectrum than what we are going to focus on tonight. But from this description, or for this definition, in the context of the work ethic, we understand that how we view work has to do with the foundation of our moral values. Okay? So where your moral values are founded will affect your work ethic. I have a question for you all to chew on at the outstart of this topic. Do you work to live, or do you live to work? Or is it neither one? Think about that a little bit. Do you work to live, or do you live to work, or is it neither of them? At the very end of the topic, I plan to answer that question, and maybe not directly, but I think one of my last quotes, you'll find the answer in there. I like to often ask questions that make you think and maybe not even answer them, because I think it's good for us to really think about some of these things. What really motivates me to get up in the morning and go to work? What's the drive? What's behind it? There's been lots of studies done on the motivation behind people going to work. And if you do studies of communism, socialism, all those things, you know, why does communism not work? Think about that for a little bit. I have some cousins who had this idea. They have a church group up in Maine, and they have this idea that they think there should be a greater equality in, as a church brotherhood. In other words, there shouldn't be one man that is worth millions and another one maybe can't pay his bills. There should be a greater equality. They didn't want to live like the Hutterites, but so they came up with this idea that they set amount. Anything that you make in excess of that amount automatically goes in the church fund. Sounds like a pretty great idea, right? The church fund should grow, and everyone should be more on an equal level. Well, guess what actually happened in reality? Anybody want to guess? What happened? It didn't work, okay? That's the simple answer. But why didn't it work? The reason it didn't work, let's just pick the number 50,000 just for, I don't know if you could support a family on that, but let's just use that number. So if 50,000 is our threshold, once I've reached that, let's say I reached that on August 15th, what would really motivate me to keep working? Now, if you really had a love for the brotherhood and the church, yes, you would. But the reality is it didn't work. Didn't work. Again, I'm not going to go into all the depths of why that didn't work. But I think that it's really important that we think about what motivates us to work. Because if we're going to motivate our next generation or our children in the right way, it's extremely important that we know what motivates us to go to work. For many generations, the American work ethic has been synonymous with grit, hustle, and the belief that hard work leads to success. Work hard, and you're going to get there. The American dream is attainable. Just get out there and work. Well, brothers and sisters, I believe that that mentality has affected us more than we want to admit. I really believe it has. But if you even go back further, the early settlers that settled this country, they grew up in an environment where their very survival depended on chopping down trees and pulling stumps out and planting crops, right? It was either, if you didn't succeed in that, you weren't going to make it. Well, I believe that obviously we find ourselves today in an environment where working is not necessarily linked to survival. Let's just be honest, it isn't. Our country has set up so that you can live off of welfare if you want to. Or, for many of us, we somewhat live off what was handed to us, whether it's the family farm or the family business, or simply the gift that we have been given by being taught God-honoring principles to be industrious. You know, until you meet people from cities to people that have not been given that, you don't realize the tremendous gift that you've been given if you have been taught how to get up in the morning and go to work. But maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. That's what I'm supposed to be teaching us how to do to our children. You know, the concept of starting from scratch and slowly working your way up doesn't necessarily fit many of our young people today. And that brings a whole set of complexities that maybe another generation before didn't have. So without a doubt, how we view life, finances, and success will have a direct impact on our work ethic. I believe that very firmly. Well, this evening I've divided my topic up in three parts. Part one, where we find ourselves in 2026 and how we got here. So in other words, we are living in 2026. And I know very little about how you all grew up. I mean, I can presume, I can say, well, I presume this is maybe how you grew up. But I'm going to share with you just a little bit of how I grew up and what effect that had on me and what effect that had on me teaching my children. And from that picture that I'm going to draw for you mentally, I think it will help you maybe in your own heart say, okay, so I grew up this way. This is some of the choices that I've been making. How is this affecting my children? Because I really believe that's some of the core base principles that affect us. Well, I grew up in a family that lived very frugally and well below our means. And when I say that, not because we were that poor, but my father felt very strongly that living frugally and practicing what the Bible teaches on good stewardship was important. And there's two verses in Luke 16 that really fit how he believed, and it had an effect on me. Luke 16, verses 10 and 11, it says, Jesus was speaking here, he said, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. He that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. Now, verse 11 is really what my father would have strongly believed. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you your trust, the true riches? So he believed that if you use money haphazardly or without good stewardship, that is directly related to how you look at life spiritually. And I'd be interested to have a discussion on how you feel about that, but that affected me in ways that when I see someone who is very haphazard and irresponsible and unaccountable in his finances, I struggle to not believe that that has an effect on him spiritually. Now, I'm not going to paint with a broad brush tonight and say that every poor manager is also poor spiritually. I don't want to say that. But what I'm saying, that had an effect on me very much. So needless to say, I was taught a good work ethic, I really believe I was, and how to save money and how to use my money wisely. My father had an office job working from home all my growing up years. I think actually, I should correct that. Maybe back when I was maybe one or two, he worked in construction just very briefly and quickly discovered that that was not his calling in life. But he was very intentional to help us children learn to work. And we had a little farm there. We raised some animals and we did chores. We had chores every day. But interestingly enough, my father was raised in a Midwestern city as a rich American child. He had zero conservative background. He was raised in a Catholic home. Rich parents who went to the country club, they lived a very rich life. My dad went to college with a blank checkbook. His dad gave him a checkbook. He could write checks for whatever he needed. That's the environment he lived in. He did not need to work with his hands. The day he decided to join a conservative church, he was officially disowned by his parents and the checkbook was taken back. He was on his own with very little to work off of. So working with his hands was a brand new experience. And my point that I'm making here is he realized where he'd come from, what he didn't want. And he was very intentional on what he wanted to teach us. But the honest truth is, if it wasn't for my mom's persistence, I don't know if our little farm would have survived. But the point that I want to really impact on our minds is he was intentional. He recognized that the value system that he had come from was not what he wanted for him or his family. And he was very intentional on teaching us something different. So I believe that it's very important that we are completely honest with ourselves on this point of what our growing up experience, what that did to us, and are we embracing it? Are we reacting to it? And I'm going to talk more about that in a little bit. So for myself, I embraced many of my father's teachings, but in one area, I didn't. I grew up in an era when you turned your paycheck over to your parents until you were 21. Now, I was thinking about raise of hands of how many people still do that. The reason I bring that up is that I didn't think that was a great idea. I really resented that growing up. So I chose to not ask that of my children. I chose to let them keep their paycheck. I think that was a little bit of reaction, and I was not very intentional on teaching them what to do with that money. So the reason I bring that up is that I believe that there's things that we can do different than our parents did, but really deeply think it through and don't react and be intentional with what you're going to do differently. So if I could go back, and I have an opportunity, I have two young children at home yet, but four of my children are on their own now. I believe that it's extremely important that when we decide to go a different route, be very intentional on how you do that. I think one of the reasons that many parents today don't keep their children's paycheck is that for many of us, we have jobs that provide sufficiently for our family. We don't need that money as such. You know, in many communities, we have moved away from the traditional farming operation that worked from dawn to dusk, and it literally takes all hands on deck to make it work. No, we've moved away from that. A lot of us have. And I am not condemning that shift. Rather, I'm pointing out the reality that comes with that. In this shift, have we adjusted our teaching to accommodate that? Because I believe that every generation is going to face their own challenges, or whatever word you want to use there. And we need to adjust our thinking and our teaching to balance that. Right along with that, some of us might have grown up in an environment where life seemed to revolve entirely around work. You know, that you just simply, that's all you ever did. You didn't get to go to Honduras on a mission work project. You just work, work, work. And so we can very easily react to that and say, you know what, I'm going to let my children take every opportunity they can to do things. Don't react, is what I'm saying. Yes, should you be allowed to go to Honduras on a mission trip? Should you be allowed to teach school in a different community? Absolutely. But be careful. Be intentional. Think it through. So my point here is our frame of reference has a huge impact on how we live today. And when you replace a value system, do it carefully and think it through very carefully. Part two, how does God look at work? What does the Bible say about working and what our occupation should be and et cetera? Well, back in about 2020, or I'm not sure what year it was, I actually preached a message on what should our occupation be. And I got some interesting feedback, but I don't have time to preach about that tonight. But I believe that the Bible does teach some very valuable principles on our work and business life. So what principles or value system do we use to decide what business to start or where to work? And once you've decided to launch off into a business venture, how do you structure it or run it? A number of years ago, I taught a class at Pilgrim Bible School on separation. And I told my students that I believe that separation is much broader than suit coats and coverings and all that stuff. I said I believe that separation includes the way we live, the way we run our businesses. And it was interesting, the pushback that I got when I tried to teach them some what I consider very foundational business practices. They challenged me on it pretty majorly. Like, you are weird. That's not how our fathers do things. And I remember they were 17-year-olds. I take that all in consideration here. But I believe that's an indicator of how the rising generation maybe looks at business. And to me, it was sobering. A key verse for this point is in Ephesians 4:1. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you work worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called. And I know this vocation could be used in many different ways, but I've chosen to look at this vocation as our calling, our occupation, or what we find ourselves in, that we should walk worthy of it, okay? And so I don't necessarily believe that God called me to work in real estate and construction. Rather, that my calling to represent Christ in that occupation. Since that's where I find myself working, I believe that God has a way that he would want me to run my business. Just for an example, what I shared with that class, that I said, I've had rental houses for years, and I've had some really interesting renters, but I've never, ever gone to court. I never plan to go to court, and I don't plan to use the court system to evict anyone. And they're like, that's not how, like, how's that going to work? Well, brothers and sisters, it does work. God's way does work. Okay, there are ways to use to work with people, to help them understand that this is not working, and use God's principles to deal with problems. We don't have time to read the entire chapter of Ephesians 4, but Paul has given the church at Ephesus some very practical teaching. Verse 28 of chapter 4 of Ephesians says, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Now that verse is packed full of instruction. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. From this verse, I see four principles that we do well to practice. Don't steal. Actually, work. Work with your hands. Work that which is good, and so you have to give to him that needeth. And I wasn't sure how far to go with these points, but I believe that there's some real solid principles here that we would do well to embrace. And unless we embrace them, it's going to be very difficult to teach our children to embrace them. So very quickly, we're going to look at these four points. So let him who stole steal no more. Well, I would dare to assume that everyone in this audience was taught very early to not steal. But I believe that stealing is broader than just literally stealing an item off the shelf at work, okay? Stealing, if you look it up in the dictionary, says to take the property of another wrongfully, to take away by unjust means, take advantage of. Have you ever taken advantage of someone? I've heard somebody, you know, brag how they needed to buy something, and they discovered this person desperately needed some cash, and so they took advantage of that situation. They bought something that was worth $1,000 for $500 because this guy had to have money to pay a bill. Is that stealing? Is that stealing? That's taking advantage of someone. I believe that is taking advantage of someone. Or to accomplish in a concealed or unobserved manner, to manipulate a situation to our advantage is another form of stealing. To misrepresent something. Salesmen are really good at that, you know? To misrepresent something. They make it sound like this is the best thing that ever was. You're not going to be able to live without it. And they talk you into buying something that you don't need. Yeah, they gave you a product for your money, but I do believe that is when you misrepresent something. Another one is to waste time while on the clock. How many of you look at your phone, do all kinds of things on your boss's time? I believe that can be a way of stealing. Number two, work with your hands. I believe what Paul is teaching here is that instead of stealing, taking advantage of others, exploiting the poor, that we should do an honest day's work. Make an honest living. Don't be lazy and expect others to take care of you. Proverbs has much to say on this subject. You know, don't be lazy, don't be a sluggard. There's so many verses that would support that thought. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, learn from her ways and be wise. Another one is, he also that is slothful in his work is a brother to him that is a great waster. But when Paul says this, work with your hands, is he literally talking about working with your hands? I believe that there is something valuable about working with your hands. Now, I know that some of us maybe do things on computers, maybe you're bookkeepers or whatever. But I'm willing to suggest that those who will not work with their hands greatly increase the temptation to take advantage of others in a number of ways. You might disagree with me, but that if you're a stockbroker, which I don't promote that at all, that you should be a stockbroker, but if you just make money by just doing transactions, it's all you do is transactions, there's a greater temptation to take advantage of people. I'm just convinced of that. In Luke 16, you can turn with me there if you want to. Again, we looked at a couple of verses there earlier. It talks about the unjust steward under this thought of working with our hands. Very interesting thing that he says here, this unjust steward. Luke 16, verse 1-3. And he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer a steward. Verse 3 is really what I want. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig, and to beg I am ashamed. My question to us this evening, could he actually not dig? Or was he too proud to dig? Okay, when you think about digging, he's talking about simply working with his hands, I believe. I don't think that a Christian should ever think himself too good to do a physical task. All of us should be willing at times to get our hands dirty. You know, grab that shovel, the rake, or a hammer, whatever it is. I have a book at home called A Dictionary of Early Christian Beliefs, and under the subject of an employment, I found a very interesting entry. It says this, if a prophet desires to abide with you, and he's a tradesman, let him work and eat. However, if he has no trade, according to your understanding, see to that as a Christian, he will not live with you idle. In other words, he's saying, put him to work. You think about Paul. Even though Paul was probably one of the greatest evangelists of all time, and you could have said, well, you know, if anybody should have been a paid evangelist or pastor, it should have been Paul, right? Because he was doing so much good for the Lord. What did Paul do? He made tents. He said, what a waste. No, actually, I believe there was something good about him physically doing some work in a trade. Peter, Andrew, James, and John were fishermen. They worked with their hands. I say all this to make the point, teach your children how to work with their hands. I think it's imperative. Everyone should learn a useful trade. You're never going to regret it. I question the wisdom of starting a 15 to 18-year-old in an office job, in a cushy chair and a desk, punching numbers. I question the wisdom of that. I really do. I believe that they should learn to work with their hands. That you can call me old-fashioned, whatever, but take that for whatever it's worth. Number three, work that which is good. Question tonight, are there occupations that a Christian should not be involved in? What was Paul saying here? Work that which is good. Well, obviously in his context, there's probably a number of things that he would have said that they should not have been involved in. And I believe that there are occupations that we today should not be involved in. I could say a lot on this point, but I would rather that you would think, I'm not going to list on the whiteboard things that we should work in, things that we shouldn't. But I believe that today we find ourselves in a world that is full of pleasure-seeking, self-indulgence, and entertainment. And I think we should think deeply how our business or work, line of work, lines up with that. You know, we are concerned about worldliness creeping in on us. Is there any connection to how we look at work and what we choose to work? We teach our children to be God-conscious and seek a heavenly kingdom. My question tonight is, does our work ethic and business practice line up with that? And trust me, I did not go through the directory and look at all your occupations. I can innocently tell you that I just want you to think about that. If you want your children to be God-conscious and be seeking a heavenly kingdom, does your business practice and your work ethic and what you choose to work line up with that? Or is what we do at work and at church two different things? I could preach a whole sermon on that subject. I don't believe that there is a sacred and a secular. Rather, I believe they are connected. Our occupation should be a way to reach people. I think we should be intentional when we choose occupations to think, how will this help the kingdom of God? How will this reach more people? How can I meet people as I do this? My burden is that we think deeply how our job and business affects our spiritual lives, our children's future, and our spiritual witness, our Christian witness. Do we practice one set of principles on Sunday and another one at work? You know, I believe our business decisions and practices have a huge impact on our ability to witness for Christ. And furthermore, a huge impact on our children. If your child is with you and he watches you make that transaction and it gets a little shady, or maybe you're taking advantage of the person, don't think for 1 minute that 10-year-old didn't notice that. Last one there under this heading is that he may have to give to him that needeth. Giving could be another message on its own. I believe that God expects us to be industrious and good stewards so we can buy a yacht and an RV and to give to those that have needy, to need. I have scripture to back up my point up from the Old Testament, from Jesus' own words, and from the early church. Listen to what the Old Testament said. Deuteronomy 16:17, every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. I had a pretty intense discussion, or maybe an argument, with a dear brother who is much older than me. He said, there's times in life that you can't afford to give. I said, brother, that is not true. You can never afford not to give. Everyone has something to give, even if it's 2 pennies, even if it's a quarter. Personally, I have this idea that every person has something to give. And I'll be honest with you, when I see the offering basket go up and down the rows, and there's times when it passes a long row of people and nobody gives, maybe they're doing PayPal, I don't know. Could be. I believe that everyone has something to give. Deuteronomy says, every man shall give. I believe it's a command, not an option. The New Testament, Jesus said in Luke 12:33, sell that you have and give alms. Provide yourselves bags that wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that faileth not. When's the last time you sold something so you had something to give? Maybe that's what we should do. If you don't have anything to put in the offering, maybe you should sell something. Or did Jesus not mean that? I'm going to let you answer that question. From the Apostolic Constitution, it said, attend to your employment with all appropriate seriousness so that you will always have sufficient funds to support yourselves and those who are needy. My question this evening is, do our children see us accumulating or giving? What do they observe? What they observe is what they're going to do, quite likely. Or they might react. They might give everything away and live in voluntary poverty. That's a possibility. But part 3, this is probably what you actually wanted me to talk about. Pointers on how to help the rising generation. I believe one of the most important things that we can possibly do is be honest with where you find yourself in occupation. If a change is needed for your family's sake, do so. If your job doesn't allow you to work with your children, be intentional in finding things for your children to work in. I'll be honest with you, my dad did a great job. Because he had an office job, he couldn't work with us, but he was very intentional about finding us employment that was good for us, that would teach us a trade and a good environment. I didn't do quite as well in that, I'll just be honest. I believe that we should be very intentional in finding things for our children to work in. Help them find ways to learn a skill or trade. I mean, if your son has an interest in woodworking and he doesn't have much to do after school, buy him some woodworking equipment, help him set it up, spend evenings with him. This is every bit as important as you making a living. Do you believe this? It's every bit as important to help your child learn to work a skill or a trade to do something as it is for you to make a living. Teach your children the meaning of integrity. Do we know what integrity means? Integrity is what Job had, a firm adherence to a code of moral values. What does that mean? It means that we use the same moral code regardless of the situation or who is present. Now, I've seen some people do some very foolish things when they were in financial straits. But brothers and sisters, I'm going to tell you right now that whether you are financially up against the wall or not, use the same moral code of values. I'm going to share you a little story quickly here about a brother in Bangladesh. I was helping the SALT team there. They wanted to hire a manager for a region, and somehow I got roped into helping them make the decision who that should be. We were interviewing different men, and we were getting some input and feedback on which ones would be qualified. And unless you understand the language barrier and the way that they sometimes, the terms they use, you might not get the full depth of what the humor in this. But they told us that this certain man is qualified for the position because he's the same in the front as he is in the back. And what they meant by that is simply that regardless whether you're present with him or behind, wherever he is, whether you're watching him or not, he is consistently a humble, honest man. And I was just so impressed by that. But it was a very humorous way of saying, but what they were saying, just so, and that's, to me, I don't know a better way of describing integrity than that. That whether you're at Walmart, whether you're at work, whether you're at home, whether you're at school, whether you're at church, you are consistent in your moral values. Your children see it, the neighbors see it, everybody can understand that you are consistent. That's a man of integrity. Teach your children the meaning of using time wisely. Self-discipline, how to schedule. That's a daunting task, but don't give up on it. You're doing them a tremendous favor if you can teach them how to get out of bed in the morning, how to make their bed. I'm a firm believer, successful men make their beds. I don't know, maybe not. I was taught that. My dad thought that if you don't make your bed, you're not going to be very successful. Whatever. I believe it's just simply a form of self-discipline. Teach them what it means to do without. That's done by an example. You know, we don't always have to have the best. I used to have these discussions with my dad, you know, why can't we do it? We can afford it. Do we need it? My son is convinced that we need a four-wheeler. Why do we need a four-wheeler? We don't have a four-wheeler. You know, teach your children to do without. You're doing them a favor. If they have this idea that they need everything that's out there, you're doing them a terrible disfavor. Teach them to esteem others higher than themselves. You know, other people's schedule matters. other people's time matters, other people's needs. Yes, we have work to do this Saturday, but sister so-and-so needs her firewood cut, so we go cut her firewood. You're teaching them some extremely valuable, that we are esteeming others higher than ourselves. And teach them to do everything heartily as unto the Lord. Colossians 3, 23 and 24 says, whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Jesus Christ. In closing, I firmly believe that a Christian and a non-Christian can work side by side, doing the same job, and on the surface, they're doing the same thing. But why they are working, and who they feel accountable to, and the underlying principles that motivate their choices are miles apart. Brothers and sisters, when you are out on that construction job, or you're working wherever, and you're working beside a non-Christian, the reason that you go to work, the reason that you take a paycheck home, and the reason you do a good job at work should be God-honoring, God-motivating, and not just to impress your boss or to take a big paycheck home. I believe that a Christian should consider, always consider, their work as God-appointed means of glorifying God and serving others. That should be the real reason that we go to work. A Christian should always consider the work as a God-appointed means of glorifying God and serving others. Brothers and sisters, we do well to teach our children how to do this in words, in actions, and consistent practices. I'm convinced that God is looking for men and women who are intentional about displaying God's love and truth as they pray, as they work, as they plan, as they labor here on earth, never forgetting the heavenly reward that is awaiting them. God bless you as you do this and teach the next generation the same. It takes intentional, being very intentional to accomplish this. I was challenged by studying this message, and I have work to do in my own life. Don't think that just because I laid some of these principles out to you that I have attained. God bless all of you for being here tonight. God bless you as you teach your children. God bless you as you live a work and in a work ethic in a way that can lead others to Christ. Do you usually pray? Or how do you close?